Hey, it's Andre from the show. I thought I'd quickly introduce myself before we get started and tell you that you're listening to Vivid Recall, which is a light-hearted and fun podcast looking into the history of all of your favourite toys and games from the 1990s and early 2000s. So buckle up and enjoy. Seeing as this is about the crazes of the 1990s and early 2000s, I'm going to assume that, like me, you were around during that time, which means you will remember something that we all had in common back in those days, and that was a mutual interest in those pocket monsters known as Pokemon. We all know the history, right? Pokemon comes from Japan. You can totally tell as it has the textbook anime style, the eyes, the character mannerisms, and the way they emote. And this is true, of course. Pokemon is a Japanese franchise that started in 1996 and hit the UK in the 90s as a triple threat, having a series of video games, a hit TV show, and also a trading card game. The video games were big news, and it seemed like everyone was involved. The original Pocket Monster games that were released on Nintendo Game Boy in Japan in 1996 were originally called Red and Green, and they were due to come out in 1995, but had some delays. This explains the 1995 copyright that you often see. Later, an updated version followed, Pokemon Blue, and the supplementary Pokemon Yellow, the Special Pikachu Edition. In the rest of the world, updated versions came out as Red and Blue. These didn't hit the USA until 1998, and you had to wait until 99 if you lived in the UK. The TV show hit UK screens in the same year. The games gained excellent traction among both serious and casual gamers, as it appealed to both audiences by having technical aspects of battling and training, leveling up your Pokemon in the most efficient way, and learning their types so you could intelligently pick the best ones to battle when fighting foes. It also had an immersive roleplay-style storyline in which you could meet and talk to NPCs, collect items, and solve puzzles and mysteries. The engaging roleplay qualities of the game meant that players could be sucked into hours of screen time, and the link cable battles made it a social event during school break times and those longer evenings of summer. You remember those, right? Sundown wasn't until like 9:30 and you'd get an extended bedtime? Or maybe you were one of the unlucky kids like me, and you had parents who would send you to bed even though it was still light outside. I remember laying there and being able to hear the neighbourhood kids outside my bedroom window, riding their bikes and still playing in the streets of the estate. But you remember what we did though. We hid our Game Boys under our pillows! So the fun never ended and the adventure continued. Did any of you get caught doing that? Because I sure did, and it was the absolute worst. And it was Nintendo's fault too, because you had to use that Action Man torch that you got for Christmas last year just to illuminate the display, as for some reason they hadn't figured out backlit screen technology yet. Then, after being busted, you would have to find some other form of secret entertainment to keep yourself busy. Or, even worse, actually go to sleep. In the first game, the player would roleplay as a Pokemon trainer, whose default name was Red. You set out in the Kanto region, and much like Ash in the adapted TV series, you would embark on an adventure, seeking gyms, battling your lifelong rival and strangers along the way in order to level up your Pokemon. The game had a large map to explore, with tasks in place that you needed to complete in order to progress. We all remember having to find the Surf HM in the Safari Zone. How annoying was that? Or obtaining Sylph Scope in Celadon City, all in order to defeat the spirit of the deceased Marowak who lived at the top of the Pokemon Tower in Lavender Town. The developers of the games had all these clever little tricks to keep things interesting and to increase the gameplay hours and overall fun of the games. Things such as Pokemon falling into different type categories, which meant that you would have to train up specific ones in order to defeat certain enemies. For example, when you do take on Pokemon Tower, it's filled with ghost-type Pokemon, so you better have a well-trained psychic like a Kadabra in order to get through more easily. Again, with the Kadabra, if you wanted a complete Pokédex, which is the catalogue of monsters that you've captured during the game, you would need to make your Pokémon evolve. This couldn't always be achieved simply by leveling them up. For example, Abra evolves into Kadabra through training, but you would have to trade it with someone in order for it to evolve into an Alakazam. You could do this with a link cable, which helped kids be social and make friends with other players. Another trading side of completing the Pokédex was that there were twin releases of the games, Red and Blue, which meant that each version has slightly different Pokémon, so you would need to trade with friends in order to catch them all. Mew is the only Pokémon in the games that can be acquired by going to a Nintendo event, or through cheating. On the topic of cheating, there was a way to glitch the first games, which would allow you to increase some items and also level up your Pokémon without battling. Do you remember? Search your memory banks and blow some dust off the shelf containing weird childhood moments, because the biggest cheat in Pokémon history is coming up after the break. Welcome back, and as promised, we're discussing game glitches and cheats. Okay, I'm sure some of you recall it straight away and can remember the steps that you had to take from memory. But for those of you who perhaps never found out, or simply deleted it from your mind so you had more room in there for Britney Spears lyrics, let me fill you in. Now, I'm not 100% sure if I'm allowed to tell you this, but it's been 27 years-ish, so I don't think Nintendo or Game Freak will mind too much. This is the most popular cheat in the games, and it's known as the Old Man Glitch. It's named for the old man in Viridian City, who is crucial for this to work. The malfunction allows you, the player, to encounter a Pokemon called Missingno, which is short for missing number. Missingno, you get it. Anyway, Missingno looks like you'd expect glitched graphics to look like. Kind of warped TV static in the shape of an elongated backwards L. It's an unofficial species, which is a normal slash bird type. Bird is a beta Pokemon type, which was deleted from the game during development. The creature takes a few different forms, sometimes appearing as different sprites due to certain game factors, and also it differs among versions. The information about this guy is vast, so I'm going to stick to the basics. This glitch was really weird. Nintendo repeatedly warned players not to seek an encounter with Missingno, as it could corrupt game data. But come on! This guy was way too intriguing to gamers, and it was talked about in a huge amount of gaming magazines and walkthroughs. Okay, so how did you find this fabled monster? Well, it's easy. At the north of Viridian City, there is an old man who teaches you how to catch wild Pokemon. Talk to him and let him do his little demonstration, then immediately fly to Cinnabar Island. Once there, head to the east coast of the island and surf up and down on the sandy beach area, where the sea is touching the land. Some people call that sand, you know, because sea and land, sand. Anyway, you'll encounter some weirdly high-level Pokemon until BAM! You'll meet a pixelated mess. It's Missingno. It might be called something else, though. It all depends on factors that include what you've named your trainer and what version you're playing. The effects of encountering this beast means that other glitches can take place, including boosting your sixth item in your bag by a factor of 128. This of course meant that you can shuffle your items around to get the most out of doing it, giving yourself a massive amount of super potions, pokeballs, or even rare candies, which allowed you to level up your Pokemon without training them. Other than cheating and discovering cool glitches, there was a host of legitimate tasks in the games, including defeating the evil gang Team Rocket, and once you'd beaten all of the gym leaders, you'd then face the Elite Four at the Indigo Plateau. These guys were the trainers at the tippy top of the ranks, and you would need to defeat them in order to obtain the title of Pokemon Master. Now, we all know the games continued to be released, with version after version and even remakes of older versions on newer gaming devices. I think my favourite re-release was Fire Red on the Game Boy Advance back in 2004. Simply because it hit hard on the nostalgia of the first games, but it had much better sprite detail and animations. I still actually sometimes play this version now. The TV series was adapted from the games and told the story of Ash Ketchum, a lad who at the age of just 10 leaves home in an attempt to pursue a life of training and battling small monsters that he imprisons within high-tech red and white balls, aptly named Pokeballs. The creatures are known as Pokemon, and in the original series, there were 151 different kinds, each falling into different type categories. Fire types had fire-based moves, such as Ember, Fire Spin, or Flamethrower. Water types had water-based moves, like Water Gun and Bubble Beam. The multiple types also included Electric, Rock, Grass, and Psychic, just to name a few. The story follows Ash on his quest to become the world's greatest Pokemon trainer, a title gained by battling gym leaders and obtaining badges from them once they're beaten. Each gym leader specializes in a certain Pokemon type. The gyms pose different challenges which the trainer must overcome to win. The difficulty in defeating each gym leader's Pokemon in battle intensifies, with the last gym being the hardest. Ash meets new friends and Pokemon whilst on his adventures, learning new skills and, of course, life lessons as he travels. The television series alone was popular among children, but the video games became a favourite and must-have for any Game Boy owner. Back in the day of school lunchtime Game Boy Link battles, I busted out a high-level Mewtwo and used Psychic on my opponent, which won the match. I then proceeded to tell my losing foe to suck it, whilst doing that cross-armed hand pump thing that people did back then. In the thrill of victory, I may have used some highly inappropriate language for my age, and that kid wound up grassing me up to the teacher, which got me in some trouble. He was a sore loser, but I was a sore winner as well. So, evens, I guess. Plus, that experience taught me some hard lessons in sportsmanship. Alongside the Game Boy games gaining popularity among school kids, there was also another thing that every young person had during that time. Pokemon cards intended for the trading card game. Now, this was a serious game, with set rules and a method of play. However, most kids disregarded this aspect entirely and committed solely to collecting and trading. I have solid memories of going to the newsagents with whatever money I managed to beg from my parents in order to purchase a thin foil booster pack of cards. The excitement and thrill of flicking through them, feeling the crisp cutout of the new deck in my hands, hunting for shinies, darks, or high-level Pokemon. I recall the schools having to ban both the Game Boy gaming devices as well as Pokemon cards, as they claimed it caused a distraction to children's learning, and also disagreements in trading and playground card battles could often turn violent, with kids getting into arguments and sometimes fights. The TV show gave rise to merchandise and spin-off games such as Pokemon Pinball, Pokemon Monopoly, and a bunch of others. Cuddly toys, bedsheets, and other merch began to hit the shelves, along with a whole host of other stuff. I remember going to see the first Pokemon movie at the cinema and receiving a free promotional Pikachu card. And when I bought the film on video later, it came with another promotional card, which was a Mewtwo. I remember the VHS being really cool, and it was bright yellow. And guess what? I still have that videotape. And if you want to see a picture of it, head over to the Vivid Recall Instagram page, which you can find at Vivid Recall Podcast. The movie series loosely fell into the storyline that was broadcast on the TV program. And after the popularity of the first film, many more followed. However, it was only the first three animated movies that were released in cinemas here in the UK. The movies have had pretty much yearly releases since 1998, though English-dubbed versions tend to have a large delay. The first movie took 2 years to hit cinemas in the UK. But since the original film, 22 animated movies have been made. That's a lot of films. There was even a live-action spin-off called Detective Pikachu, which did hit worldwide cinemas and had some big names playing Pokemon characters, such as Ryan Reynolds. The Detective Pikachu movie managed to pull in $433 million at the worldwide box office. And although it didn't do too greatly in reviews, it still pulled an audience, which has got to show the franchise's popularity. This is a live-action Pokemon movie, grossing that much. Just look at the history of games or even anime live-action adaptation movies. It's not always done well. I mean, we all remember Dragon Ball Evolution, right? The video games are regularly released on the Nintendo platform, with the latest editions coming out on the Nintendo Switch. There's even a mobile game, Pokemon Go, which has had a large amount of success since its release in 2016. It has over 100 million downloads on Android, and with regular updates, people are still playing the game to this day. I remember hearing about it when it first came out. People were being knocked over in the street, hit by cars, and players would be walking onto football pitches during matches in order to catch Pokemon that were on the field. As for the trading card game, people still meet at gaming centres to play, not only casually, but in competitive tournaments. These aren't just happening throughout the UK, but in many different countries too. In fact, the 2002 World Champion Tournament took place in London, and the 2023 event took place in Yokohama, Japan. With the nostalgic boom of the trading card game that occurred during the COVID-19 pandemic, original trading card prices have skyrocketed for collectible cards. New releases are doing quite well off the sudden revamp, with trading card box sets being sold in the UK in stores like B&M, and booster packs being available in toy stores across the country. And of course, McDonald's have cashed in on the action. Yes, Mackie D's were giving out Pokemon cards in Happy Meals for a period in 2021. I saw loads of Pokemon sets being sold in Costco the other day. With the Nintendo games, the TV show and the movies still being regularly released, as well as the cards and booster packs being put out, competitive tournaments and events for the trading card game are holding popularity among people across the world. And you can certainly say that Pokemon is still very much around and has traction today. Many collectors of the cards still have their original decks from back in the 90s. Back in the 90s and early 2000s, when we were kids, mums would commonly make us get rid of old toys and games as we got older, which was a massive shame because a lot of those toys and games and collectibles sell for some really high prices now. If you've got a selection of Pokemon cards, it might be worth having them appraised, as you could be sitting on a treasure trove of rare or valuable cards without knowing. I used to have a shiny Charizard, and I had a bunch of others too, and the sad thing is, I have got no clue where on earth they are. I must have either lost them when we moved house, or I may have even given them away and forgotten about it. My mother could have even disposed of them without my knowledge after finding a bunch of old items in storage somewhere. But I sure hope that isn't the case though. I do think about them from time to time, and I hope that one day I'll get a phone call saying that she's found them in a box somewhere. Fingers crossed that that one day happens, but I'm not holding my breath. It's safe to say that the Pokemon franchise has had a major impact on not only those who grew up with it during its original release, but also the youth of today. Having memories of the games, cards, and TV show gives myself and so many others a link to the past that is extremely relatable to most people born in the late 80s and early to mid 90s. Pokemon hit hard among children of that era, and it's still a topic of conversation over 25 years later. Series 1 is currently on Netflix, and I rewatched it when I was writing this podcast episode. I have to say, listening to the theme tune and hearing the voices of the characters brought back so many great memories. I'm really glad that I grew up during this time and can look back and recall what seems like an endless summer of childhood. Trading cards with the neighborhood kids, playing the Game Boy games with friends at school, and my mum taking me to buy booster packs from the little newsagents in my hometown. I remember watching the TV series on Saturday mornings with the then youthful presenters Ant and Dec on the popular British television programme SMTV Live, watching Ash, Brock and Misty travel around on their adventures whilst eating a bottomless bowl of cereal and just being thankful that I'm not in school. I'm Andre T. Kemp, and that's what I call nostalgia. Please hit up the Vivid Recall Instagram page to see some extras, updates, and information regarding today's episode. You can find it at Vivid Recall Podcast. You've made it this far, so please do give the podcast a 5-star rating and leave a review, as well as posting about it and sharing it with your friends and family. Go on, you know it will help me. Please let me know what you think of the show via the social media links, and help spread the word on Twitter, now called X apparently, by tagging the page at Vivid Recall in your tweets. Also, make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast on whatever podcast app you're listening with. That way, you won't miss future releases. And speaking of future releases, here's a taster of what's in store next time. Next time on Vivid Recall. The most memorable flipping game on the planet? Some use them for playing, others for trading, but almost all kids collected Pogs. Yes, I'll be talking about the small discs that featured the dude with the fuzzy hair and toothy grin. We talk Pog history, the Tiny Toons cladded spin-offs known as Tazos, and deep dive into the craze of the 1990s that had children gambling and getting kicked out of school. Pogs. Where did they come from? Do you want to know? Where the hell did my Pog collection go? You'll find out on the next exciting episode of Vivid Recall. The Vivid Recall podcast was written and produced by me, Andre T. Kemp. If you want to check out the list of references I used to research this topic, you'll find them in the show notes. Thanks for listening.